Bonjour, my fine friends.
Welcome to
Destination Discourse. I'm your host, Stuart Butler, and I'm joined today with the lovely, the wonderful, the beautiful Adam Stoker. How are you?
I'm good, but honestly, like these compliments, I don't know what to do with them, Stuart. Thank you. That's so kind of you.
I know. I went a little French today. I had to be a bit more romantic about it. So, you know.
Very impressive. Are you going to Europe sometime soon or something?
Actually, I'm going to London. Yeah. Probably will have already been when this airs, but yeah. Going
nice.
To travel.
That explains
week.
The French.
Yeah. Well, I guess. I don't know. I was trying something new. Maybe it worked. Maybe it didn't. I don't know. But we are joined today with the lovely and the beautiful Jennifer Walker from Visit Dallas. How are you, Jennifer?
Good. Thank you for having me, Stuart and Adam. Great to be here.
We're glad to have you. I'm a big fan of you. The work you've done, the rebranding there in Dallas has been phenomenal. And I don't even know if we'll get to talk about that today, although hopefully we will a little bit, because you brought a really interesting topic today that we're going to dig into. We ask all our guests, hey, what's your pet peeve or what's the thing that you want to talk about? So this one genuinely surprised me, but I think it's an amazing conversation that we're going to have in just a few minutes. But before we do, it's that time, Jennifer, hold on to your hat.
Oh man, I've been waiting for this.
Here we go.
It is that time. It's Stu's News.
Oh, she's dancing, Stuart. This is a good sign.
She and Caleb, they need to have a dance off.
There's our next time at Esto, we'll have Jennifer and Caleb on stage dancing.
There you go.
All right, so I've got a.
You're still blocking the lyrics, though. I mean, when you do the person over the. Over the thing, you're blocking the lyrics. No one wants to see you in the way of the lyrics.
Trying something new, and I'm still making mistakes. But that's what the show's all about, right?
It's okay. We'll allow it. All right. So what's Stu's News? You got us today.
Yes, and this will be my first time sharing a TikTok video.
If only we practiced before, right?
Yeah. But you know what? I'm going to do it right now. I think I've got it.
Okay, share the audio, share the video. Should be the same as Stu's News, right?
I think I'm going to do it as the background, too, and I'm going to get my head out of the way here.
Okay. Oh, look at you. No, there's no audio.
Oh, you know what? This time, I'm going to... Oh, we're ruining it here. I'm going to click unmute, and we're going to try
one
more time.
I didn't order this. I ordered steak. Oh, you ordered steak. Bet you thought I was going to throw that. We're not that kind of restaurant.
It's pretty good.
Oh my God. You
want to describe it for the people that were listening?
Yeah. This is a small Hawaiian food. Oh, no, it's playing again.
We can't hear it.
Get out of here.
Because you stopped sharing.
Yeah, so this is a small Hawaiian food restaurant here in the state of Utah. I actually think they may have a location or two outside of Utah, but this is a small organization. And you and I have talked a lot about how the new marketing equation, and this is my philosophy. I think you liked it. I don't know. But it's attention plus trust is what's required to have successful marketing. And in this attention economy, if we keep the same model of awareness, consideration, and purchase, people knowing you exist is not enough. Now you need to get their attention. And what this restaurant did so well is they just made a simple 15-second video where there was a little bit of a misdirect, right? Where she pretended she was going to take the high road and not throw the food. And then you see her, it actually says in this restaurant, we don't throw food, but we might throw hands. That's what the copy said, which I thought was really good.
So you want to describe the beats of the story? Because you may not have figured it out just by listening if you're on the podcast, right?
Oh, that's a good point. So it shows a woman bringing food out to somebody and they said, oh, I ordered steak. And she pretends she's going to throw it. And then she stops herself and looks at the screen and says, I bet you thought I was going to throw this. We're not that kind of restaurant. And then the next clip is her going back and just beating the crap out of the cook, which is, and he's a big Hawaiian guy. So it's a hilarious visual and they executed it really well. There's 57,000 likes on this video.
Yeah.
57,000 likes, and usually likes is like 15% of the views or whatever. So we're talking, they must have gotten a minimum of 250,000 views for this little restaurant here in Utah. I think that the future of marketing is getting attention and then leveraging that attention to build trust as quickly as possible. And I really like the way this little restaurant didn't need a massive budget to do this. It was very simple, and they were able to generate a ton of attention with it.
Yeah, it was cute, right? Because they're subverting expectations twice, right? Because they're doing they're playing the audience really well, like a fiddle, because you think you're in on the joke, and then they double down on a second subversion. Because the first one is, oh, she's going to throw it.
Yeah,
she's mad, and she's like, no, we're not going to do that. And you're like, oh, that's cute. And then she's beating the guy up, which we're not condoning violence for sure, but it was done with tongue-in-cheek levity, like, let's take it for what it's worth.
He was a paid stuntman.
yeah. She didn't know, no cooks were hurt in the production of this video.
I'm curious, Adam, do you know what kind of results they got from that aside from video views? Did they see any foot traffic? Did like sales spike?
I literally saw this video this morning and sent it to Stuart, and he's like, oh, we need to talk about this. So I'm going to dig into this.
See, Jennifer's one of the good CMOs. She doesn't rely on vanity metrics, and she's looking for real.
Like, the bottom line, did it move the needle?
That's right.
I like it. I'm going to find out. The They're bank. Here in Utah.
Great, but did it
They're
work?
They're here in Utah. I'll find out.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that you would hope that they're parlaying that into the attention into business, right? And at least the awareness is up, the attention is up. So it's cute. I think we're seeing more of that sort of promotional video that's more in the style of a content creator versus a polished ad, right? That seems to be the trend that's resonating with people. And that's where that trust comes in your equation, Adam. So it's cute. I like it.
Have you guys seen, there's another restaurant that went really viral this week, and the trend is people coming in and ordering at closing time with like 2 minutes left before closing time.
Mm-hmm.
And the person at the register is sitting there laughing, and the cook is screaming expletives in the background because they don't want to start the fryer again. And they don't want, anyway, that's another way I've seen people kind of get attention with this trend as well.
Yeah. I think when you're doing that though, it's important that you're doing it on brand, you're doing it with positivity and levity, and you know, you're not punching down physically or literally, or figuratively or literally.
I think they were punching down in this one.
Yeah, but you know, it was done in a tasteful way, it felt like.
I think just going out and like punching visitors, you know, that's the next step.
Yeah, we beat our guests. That would be different. Probably not a good message, right? So, but it was cute. Very cute. I like it. And I think subverting expectations, doing a double subversion I think that's pretty clever. So, and you know, I get disappointed sometimes in our industry because we're promoting probably the most fun product that exists, right? Travel. It's amazing. And we don't always have fun with our promotion. And I think there's opportunity to do a better job of that. All the data suggests that levity and humor tends to be something that makes things more memorable and more shareable word of mouth. And so I think we all need to lean more into humor and levity in our promotions. So that's cool. But Jennifer, we weren't here to talk about that. We're here to talk about your topic. So I'm going to hand it over to you and let you sort of share, one, what the topic is, and two, why you felt like this is the topic you wanted to talk about on the show.
Sure. So I think having fun is actually a good segue into this. You know, you talked about pet peeves, and I think one of my primary pet peeves working in our industry is this notion around, are DMOs good role models? Are we walking the walk? Meaning, are we actually taking vacations? Because from my perspective, whether I'm looking at my staff, whether I'm looking at leadership or even my peers within the industry, it just seems that we're rarely taking vacation. And if and when we do, we're certainly not completely unplugged.
Mm-hmm.
We are leaving vacation days on the table, or we feel guilty about doing it. And it's almost like this mind-blowing concept to me, because if we are not going to walk the walk, if we're not going to be those role models, those stewards, then who? This is our fundamental job, to promote and advocate for the benefits of travel.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't now this notion of one of the benefits of traveling, breaking down barriers, breaking down stereotypes, isn't that more important than ever, particularly in today's climate? It's something that I would love to see us fundamentally invest in more? I think that's one of my questions, is that have we forsaken the fundamentals of who and what we are?
No, I think it's a very valid point. I mean, I am probably more guilty than most of not taking vacation time. And certainly when I am on vacation, my laptop's with me and I'm spending 2 or 3 hours every day at least, replying to emails and stuff. We're trying to be more zero tolerance on that. We're trying to make specific moves to make sure, okay, you have a plan to cover your stuff when you're gone so you don't have to worry about it. We're taking you off of email distribution lists when you're gone. So, and what we'll do is we'll give you a recap, a digest of what you missed when you get back. Because some people are like, well, then I get back and then it's like I'm buried under this pile. It's like, well, let's make that piece easier for you. Like, let's relieve some of that anxiety. And we just recently had a team member that took, she has not taken vacation time in forever that I've been here in 4 years. She barely takes any. And she wanted to do, it was a big birthday anniversary, and she wanted to take a longer trip to Europe. And so she came and said, can I take three weeks off? And I was like, yeah, absolutely, 100%. And we were really deliberate to say, team, you are going to have to figure it out on your own. Like, she's a leader in our organization. And so I said, the questions you would usually have her, just make the decisions, like, figure it out. And you know what? Over the last 3 weeks, I've seen so much growth from some of these individuals because they weren't relying on someone else to do some of that work and thinking for them. So I think we've got to, as leaders in the organization, set the tone. Number one, we got to set an example. But two, we've got to provide the environment and the culture where that's not just accepted, but it's expected within our team. I think that for me, that's important. It's a focus.
It's interesting you were saying that because I was doing a little research, prior to this podcast, of course, just to see if there were any DMOs that actually have any kind of, policies or mandates in place. And I came across this fact that Visit Florida actually has a mandated vacation policy. They mandate that all employees must take a minimum of 5 consecutive business days of PTO annually, which I love. And
That's great.
I don't think a number of DMOs, at least to my knowledge, have any kind of formal policy in place to that end. Or the examples that you were just providing, ensuring that when your staff do take vacation, that you are assisting them essentially on the back end to ensure that they can remain unplugged.
And can get plugged back in easily, efficiently when they come back, right?
Exactly.
Adam, what about you? How is this on the agency side? Because I would assume you guys take vacation all day long, and when you're swimming in the money that the DMOs are paying you guys. So, what's your
Man,
perspective?
you must have me confused with one of the other agencies, but I want to take the other side of this, not because I disagree with you guys, but I want to illustrate the entire point, right? Because in a vacuum, what you're saying about the importance of taking vacation really makes a lot of sense. But we're also having this conversation in a time when DMOs across the country, and I mean, I'll speak for the US, and I don't have near as much information outside of the US, are losing percentages of their funding. Budgets are going down. People are getting laid off, and that's happening both on the DMO side and on the private agency side and other vendor side. And as you look at this, the argument against what you're saying is in a time of crisis, we need all hands on deck. And I guess I'll get a little vulnerable here. I mean, I've laid people off this year because of what I'm talking about, where budgets are going down. We actually made a directional change in our organization and decided to pivot away from the way we were doing business before. And we had some clients that didn't want to come with us on that journey and come with us a different direction. They wanted us to continue to do things the way we had done it before. And we lost enough revenue where I had to make a change on our staff in order for us to be able to continue to operate successfully. And so I look at that, and I can tell you that if somebody came to me right now and said, can I take 3 weeks of vacation? I don't have the ability to accommodate that as a private business. And of course, our funding mechanisms and things like that are a little bit different than tourism destinations. And so I just want to make sure that as we're talking about this, I don't want the people who are running small organizations or who don't necessarily are in a time of crisis to think, well, I need to give everybody 3 weeks of vacation. So how do we level set that a little bit and make sure that it's fair for both the organization and the employee?
I think it's totally fair. And I think a 3 week is sort of on the extreme side, right? That's not typical.
And I'm using it as the extreme, right? Yeah.
So I'd say a couple of things. I think one, human beings aren't built to continue at peak level indefinitely forever, right? We've all been there where we felt burned out, where we felt tired, fatigued, and we do not perform at our best, right? I think I'm not just speaking for myself, although I will sort of switch to talking about myself for the sake of argument. I know there are times in my career where I've gone a long period without taking a vacation. And I'm not just talking about taking off a Friday here and there. I'm talking about like an actual step away, switch off, where I'm coming into the office, I'm putting in the hours, but I'm not performing at a level that is efficient, right? Where, and that could be, you know, in this role, it could be in previous roles where I feel burnt out, where I'm feel unmotivated, where I feel like I'm putting in the effort, but I'm not maybe getting the output that I want, right? And so I think we've got to acknowledge that. The humans are just built that they need breaks, they need to recharge, they need to reset. And so my counter to you in saying we can't afford to let people take time off, and I'm hyperbolic in what you said because you didn't quite say that, but let's say for argument's sake, is if you don't let people take time off, then at some point all of your team they're probably going to be fatigued, disgruntled, underperforming, and then that's not a good recipe for success either. So I think the imperative is for you to say, how do I create redundancies and cross-training and the ability to have people take time off and it not dramatically impact our performance for that short period? And assuming it is a short period, right? So I think that would be my counter to what you're saying.
And I totally agree with that. I do want to, just for the sake of clarity, I do want to say I've never actually turned down a PTO request. People that have been here 2 years, we give them unlimited vacation policy. But that doesn't change the fact that it is very difficult for the organization if that's abused, right? And I think that's I want to make sure that we're talking about level setting that correctly. And Jennifer, it looked like you were going to chime in there.
Yeah, I mean, I'll essentially echo what Stuart was saying, and that is, you know, I'm not suggesting that we don't have jobs to do. You know, we know from Destination Next that 42%, I think, of DMOs are concerned that their funding is at risk. We have to be responsible about this. And as with many things in life, timing is everything. I'm not going to up and take a vacation when there's a crisis, God forbid, you know, within our organization or town or destination rather. But when we look at things that are happening within our space currently, the fact that the U.S., for example, is getting ready to celebrate its 250th anniversary, the fact that we're going to be welcoming the Olympics in 2028, the fact that Dallas, along with a number of other destinations in the country, are going to be welcoming FIFA World Cup, we need to send a message to roll out the red carpet to essentially communicate that we are open for business. And what better advocates can we have for that than us as people within the DMO space? So I think, again, there's a balance there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll go one step further. I think that above and beyond individuals taking vacation and the many benefits that they have for that, there's also learning associated with that, right? You can use it as an R&D, you know, kind of experiment whereby you can observe what is happening in other destinations via transportation or communicating, wayfinding signage, all of the things, and take those learnings back to your own DMO to improve the visitor experience on your end.
Right. To play the role of your customer for a little while, right? Yeah. It's 100%. Always good if you're obsessed with your customer.
Well,
yeah, I think the other thing is like, we do travel a lot, right? Not necessarily on vacation, but a lot of people in our roles, especially are at conferences and things like that. And I'd say I've been guilty of being so focused on the event that I'm in and really not acting like a visitor in a destination as much. You know, sometimes they'll do some kind of immersion tour or something and I'll go along with that. But I, you know, part of me wonders if I should spend a little more time acting like a visitor in those destinations, not just going to the convention center, not just spending time in the hotel bar in, you know, doing a little more of the visitor stuff.
You're traveling and you're like, yeah, I went to this destination, but all I saw was the interior of the hotel or the conference.
Yeah.
Yeah. It makes me wonder if maybe there's a way to build some sort of a structure that allows employees to be able to go take more advantage of their vacation time and travel, and then also be able to have some sort of value that comes back to the organization. Like you're saying, Jennifer, like if we send somebody to a conference, we encourage you to add 2 days onto your conference so that you can go enjoy the destination. But then we want you to come give a presentation of what you learned, what you experienced, and how we can implement some of that as an organization. Another option would be in this era of content creation, right? Can we ask employees, or maybe tell employees, we'll give them additional time if they'll make a reel we can share on our social pages to highlight that they went on that trip and had a great time and we're excited to have them back or something like that. And of course, I don't want to demand that people bring back pictures they don't want to share publicly. So that's most definitely not my intention. But can we build it into, like, instead of restricting, providing more value both directions?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll give another real world example. When I first joined Visit Dallas, and I'm going to take this to the local level, my staff did not know that they had permission to go out in the community and go to the restaurants, to go to the points of interest, just to experience that for themselves. And it just shocked me because I was like, that's your job. You need to experience the destination like a visitor would. We need to be experts on that product. So I think above and beyond taking vacation outside of your destination, it's also immersing yourself within your destination proper to experience it through the lens of a visitor. Because as you know, residents think very differently about the destination than a visitor does. And as another example, just doing my homework, I had seen that Meet Minneapolis actually has an employee immersion program. They have a dedicated budget that they set aside for this, and staff are allocated an allowance, essentially allocated or earmarked for local tourism expenses, which could include things like admission tickets to museums, meals at new or partner restaurants, tickets to sporting event venues. And then they're required, to your point, Adam, to come and give a report back in terms of what they experienced, to staff, which I think is
I love that.
Who was that does that, Jennifer?
Minneapolis.
Oh, that's great. That's really smart. I'm going to go talk to HR about that. That's really,
Well, it goes
really
back to your
smart.
premise, Jennifer, that we need to be setting the example, right? And tourism is supposed to be fun. They have a budget for fun in Minneapolis, right? I think that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah,
And
I also wonder if we have a, sorry, go ahead. I was going to segue a little bit, so go ahead and finish your thought.
No, I got it. It's all about education as well. If we can't
Yeah.
understand our product, and be spokespeople, for it, then we're not doing our jobs.
Yeah, for sure. So I was going to bring it around a little bit into the promotion side, because this isn't just, obviously we want to set a good example as people in the industry, but we're not the only industry that suffers from this, right? And it just imagine if we could convince people to take just 10% more of their vacation time, or one more day a year, what impact that would have, especially right now when we have a federal shutdown, which is estimated to cost us $1 billion a week in travel expenses and just the economy in general. What if we can convince more people to take their vacation time? How transformative that would be, even if they just take their days off and spend it in market, right? That's still so in the zeitgeist in general. And I remember after the, I think it was the 2008 crash, and golf, the game of golf was under so much attack, right? And people, it became very kind of, there was a stigma to you playing golf at that point. I was working with an organization here in Myrtle Beach called, at the time, Golf Holiday, no, Golf Tourism Solutions. And we did a bunch of different campaigns, but it was all around this concept of getting permission to play golf. We were sort of leaning into the zeitgeist of, you're not allowed to play golf. So we were getting, and there were some really fun campaigns that came out of it. One was we created sick notes from your doctor that were very tongue in cheek that you could take to your boss and say that the doctor was prescribing you to go and play golf and some other stuff. But I just wonder, as an industry, either individual DMOs or national organizations should be out there with this message more aggressively, saying take your vacation time and demonstrating the value of that vacation time. And some do that a little bit, right? But could we do it more?
But go ahead, Jennifer.
No, I'm going to go on another topic. So
then I want to stay here for just a second, but I love the idea of a DI or a US travel with a massive campaign about use your vacation time. Like that is such a great message that I actually think accomplishes a lot of the things that Jennifer brought to the table here. And it really sets the example that if we're also the beneficiaries of vacation time, of course we should be encouraging you to use your vacation days at an industry level, not just at a, destination level.
Yeah. And I think we could, do it in a way that we almost shame people for not taking a vacation time. Like it's expected. And we talk about this to our employees. It's like, because we have a finite number of vacation times and it doesn't roll over. We used to roll it over, but we found that it was incentivizing people not to take it, right? So we actually changed the policy. There was a little fallout for that. We let people catch up and, they didn't lose stuff, but they had a grace period. But now we tell them, like, this is your compensation. Your vacation time is part of your compensation. If you don't take every day, that's like you taking your paycheck and only depositing 90% of your paycheck and leaving the rest for the company. It's the same thing. It's part of your package, so you have to take it. So I think if we did some national campaigns, and I don't think it's just DIs and people like that. I think you could see Expedia's in TripAdvisors and other people that are in the ecosystem that benefit from more travel, their commercials could center around, you have to take your vacation time, otherwise you're a dummy,
Yeah, I mean, the initiative that US Travel came up with years ago, the National Plan for Vacation Day, is one, but it's a day. And I don't think that we need to be more frequent with that messaging to get above beyond just that day. And to your point, Stuart, to invite other industries and other partners to help amplify that message throughout the year.
Yeah. Get with SHRM and the HR organizations and have them push it to all of their customers,
Well, going back to the video I showed at the very beginning, I can see like little restaurants and they're empty and somebody walks in and says, "Whoa, is it always this empty?" And it's like, "No, but John didn't take his vacation days this year, so we're screwed," or something like, obviously that's not the exact wording, but I think it would be kind of a really fun, punchy campaign to create a whole bunch of content about like the real impact of you not taking your vacation days.
Yeah. Yeah. That could go to a dark place though. So you'd have to be careful, but you could do it with satire, right? You could do it with fun for sure. But yeah. I like it.
I think one of the other considerations that came to mind to me when I was thinking about this topic as well is above and beyond leisure, the importance of meetings taking place in person. We've seen this in the meetings and convention space, the fact that virtual meetings are still a thing, our being able to promote the power of meeting in person, I think is more important than ever. When you look at AI, you look at the ability for meeting planners and attendees to attend these events virtually, advocating for those attendees to come and experience the destination in person and that power of meeting in person.
Yeah.
Urging them to take the leisure stays, to extend their vacation while they're in market. I think we need to advocate even stronger for that.
Yeah. And maybe structurally, and not everyone would want this, but, I know our governor's conference does this where they sort of bookend the conference around immersion tours. So we, in our governor's conference, it moves to different cities each year in South Carolina, but usually there's like an opening keynote one day, and maybe that afternoon or the following morning, there's an immersion tour for half a day, and then there's more content. So you're sort of almost forced into spending time in the destination. Now, a lot of people still go to their hotel room and check their emails. But increasingly, we're seeing folks wanting to get immersed. So I think that's good. I think I'm going to rethink how I travel when I'm going to conferences.
I think, again, we have to be intentional about it. But if we can, at the organizational level, encourage some kind of policy or benefit for doing that, or incentives, whatever the case might be, making it official in that regard, I think would go an incredibly long way.
Well, and if you attach learning to it, which is what your original thesis was, the value that gets to be retained in the organization is probably greater than the value of having that person work a few extra hours that day.
Yeah, no question. No question. Adam, could I shift a little bit and ask you a question? Because you mentioned something I want to drill into a little bit, which is you have an infinite vacation day policy. Do you look at the data of that related to how many days people actually take?
In aggregate, it averages to about 2 weeks per person. And yeah. I've got some people who take more and some people who take less. I'll give you just a funny data point that I didn't expect. But usually if somebody takes more, like on the 3 to 3.5 weeks, I usually get their notice that they're quitting within a few months after they hit that in a year, yeah. which is yeah. fascinating. I didn't expect that. But it averages about 2 weeks a year.
Yeah. So I think there's some data out there, right, about the impact. I think the last study I saw showed that people that have infinite tend to take, on average, take less vacation than people that have a finite. Did you switch from a finite amount to infinite?
We
did.
Did
you notice a trend after that?
You know, I wasn't tracking it well enough to notice back yeah. then when we made that switch. When we bought the company from the previous owner in 2016, as an employee, one of the things that I felt like would have been valuable to me was to be able to feel more comfortable taking time off. And so we instituted the unlimited policy for people that had been there 2 years or more. And the reason for that is we knew we could trust you once you've been yeah. there 2 years. In looking back at that, I'm not sure if that was the correct thing. It was what my education at the time told me was going to be a good thing. But we've
it was in vogue back then, right? There was a trend yeah. towards that. Like a lot of the hipster businesses were doing. I'm not calling you a hipster business. Saying a lot of the hipsters and the tech startups, that was yeah. what they were doing.
Well, and we've teased going back. And yeah. the hard thing about going back is even if somebody's going to use it more, the reaction to the teasing of that is, well, you're taking something,
you're taking
away.
Something away.
And mm-hmm. I don't want to create that kind of negative cultural impact. And so mm-hmm. I'm not sure what to do. To be honest with you, I'm kind of at a yeah. loss of what to do there.
Yeah, I think I'm sort of just philosophically opposed to infinite because I don't think it's – I think it's a – how do I say this? I think it creates a downward pressure on the person, right? Because now there's a guilt that can be associated with taking too much. And then you're putting the pressure on them to determine what's too much. It's like when you have like infinite flexi time at work, like come in at whatever time you want, as long as your work's getting done. But, you know, we also intuitively know, well, if I'm showing up at 11:30 every day, that's probably not cool for morale and convenience yeah. for my teammates, right? So I think in general, people tend to operate better when there are guidelines, you know? And so it's
the great
hard
thing
to say
about this,
it's infinite, but we want you to take about two weeks. You know, that's tough, right? Because now you're putting pressure on them to determine, can I take 2.5 weeks or do I take 1.5 weeks, you know?
Well, the great thing about this conversation being recorded is I can actually take this segment, send it to my team and say, what do you think?
Yeah. I mean, I think you'd get a mix, right? I think you're going to get some people that are very black and white and like, you're taking stuff away from me. But I think you'll get some people that say, it would be a relief to say, I have permission to take 2 weeks a year or whatever the number is you come up with, you know? I really do. Jennifer, what do you think? Where do you stand on this infinite versus finite?
I mean, I've seen what Adam has been sharing and that typically when you offer something like that up, people aren't abusing it. Mm-hmm. And if they are, they're likely not a good fit for your organization or a short-term way out.
Yeah.
You know, I think more than anything, and however we identify how that works within our organization, fostering that spirit of taking a vacation and prioritizing taking a vacation. I think mm-hmm. you mentioned this earlier as well, Stuart, in that talking about this notion about sustainability. DMOs, our role has increased, I think, perhaps more than it's ever been in terms mm-hmm. of increasing roles and responsibilities and evolving all of the things. It's about that notion of putting on your air mask before putting on others,
mm-hmm.
ensuring that you are taking care of yourself and therefore you are able to help others in that regard.
Yeah, no, I agree. And otherwise, I mean, the human body is just not designed to run at full pelt indefinitely. It's not. I mean, I know the closest I've come to burning out, I've never had, you know, a major breakdown or anything in my career. I've seen a lot of people that have, but the closest I've come to it is those stretches where it's just like constant with no end in sight. The other thing psychologically that vacation time does is it gives you something to look forward to, right? And you can sort of push forward a little harder. Humans are really interesting. I worked in the hotel industry for a long time before I was on the DMO side, and we knew that December 26th, traffic was going to spike on all our hotel websites, regardless of where they were in terms of seasonality, you know, if it was ski destination or summer beach destination. We knew that December 26th was the trigger, not January 1st. And I believe, like, this is my hypothesis, I believe that humans need something to look forward to. I think it's in our DNA. I think it's something that we all gravitate towards. And we want something to look forward to. And camera just dropped out. And I think for a lot of people in the U.S., Christmas is something they look forward to with their families. And then it's over on December 26th, and they need that next thing to look forward to. And for a lot of people, that's their big marquee vacation every year. And so that's when the traffic starts jumping on December 26th. Never proven that, but that's sort of the data is undeniable that you see that spike. So vacation time is something people look forward to. And so makes you happier, makes you in a better mental place. You're going to be a better employee if you're looking forward to something like that.
Absolutely. And I think the entire impetus of this discussion is just the irony, I feel like, of tourism organizations not prioritizing it perhaps as much as they should. If our charter is to ultimately enhance the quality of life for residents, that includes us. Our quality of life is important as well.
Yeah, we're going to set an example. Do you think, this is just a thought that sort of occurred to me, do you think our industry, just the type of people it attracts, you know, but there's sort of a DNA to people that really love and stay in this industry. We tend to be caring people. We tend to care about people, right? We tend to care about the community. We tend to want to have an impact. Do you think that's part of our problem? You know, you don't get many people in our industry that just come in and it's a 9-to-5 job and they don't really care. You know, certainly not the folks that make it in the industry up the ladder. So is that part of our DNA that's also, you know, the positive side, that's also a bit of a curse, which is why some of us choose not to take our vacation and don't, when we do take vacation, don't want to turn off because we're just so into this. We enjoy it. We love it. It's part of our identity in a lot of cases. I feel like that's, I don't know if that's true or not. Just a thought.
I mean, I think that there is truth to that. We all seem to be similar breeds. I think those of us who have been in this industry for some time, we're here for a reason. You know, we love it. And I think the other piece, though, to add to that is it goes back to what I was saying earlier, and that is just increasing roles and responsibilities.
Yeah.
Do list just keeps building and building and building. And I think that is a challenge in and of itself.
Yeah. Some of that's our own doing, though, right? Our roles and our responsibilities. A lot of that is our own doing. Like, we sort of have seen, and again, I think we care about our community and we want our community to be successful. And a lot of communities don't have alignment. They don't have a place where the power brokers convene and can solve problems with a unified, aligned strategy. And so we've sort of, in a lot of destinations, inserted ourselves into that role, you know? And if you go to the extreme, to like areas like Topeka and others where they've sort of brought it all under one, Spartanburg's the same way, under one umbrella. So they're actually bringing those organizations that are impacting quality of life and economy under one roof and one universal strategy. But that's not the case in the majority of destinations. But I do think that's a trend we're seeing, that people are moving towards that. And usually it's the DMO that's actually the catalyst for that, at least in the destinations where tourism is a big driver.
No, I mean, DI talks about this all the time in their CDME series, and that's the evolving role of the DMO. The fact that we are now focused on things like advocacy and community relations, but yet we're not staffing up on our teams to accommodate that. It's just adding on to the existing plate.
Yeah.
So we need to find the bandwidth to do that too.
Yeah. And we've got to do it in a way that we don't leave the core function behind, right? It's easy
Correct.
for, I mean, as the CMO, and we had Emily Zatucci on here previously that talked about that role of the CMO. And I felt it when I was a CMO that I'd become like this chief advocacy officer or chief value officer as well as a CMO, at the expense of spending time doing what I should be doing, which is driving performance on the marketing side, you know? And so I end up relying on the team to do that stuff because I'm getting drugged out talking to people. So I'm assuming you're feeling that same pull.
I love that podcast, and she is 100% spot on. This
Yeah.
question about when do I actually get to do marketing is something that I feel like I live on a daily basis.
Yeah. Sometimes I just want to open up Google Ads and place a pay-per-click ad, you know? I miss those days, those simpler days. They never argued with me. It was great. Well, this is awesome. We're getting low on time, but this is such an inspiring episode to me. It sort of, I like I said, it took me off guard when that was what you came with, because I thought, you know, you Dallas just went through this amazing rebrand, which I'll let you give a shameless plug for in a second. And so for you to come with this topic, I'm like, this is something we haven't tackled on the show before, but it is so important that we have
Yeah.
these conversations out in the open. So really, really, really appreciate it. Any final thoughts for you before I let you do your shameless plug, Jennifer?
No, I think, again, just prioritizing this and finding ways, even small ways, within the organization. I want to bring this back to our leadership team and talk about how we can consider maybe infusing some of this into our HR policy, whatever the case might be, to encourage that. Because I'm going to go back to one of the whole reasons that I got in this industry to begin with, and that is because travel and tourism is fun. We're not saving lives, thankfully. Like, we get to do this. I love my job. I love that I get to work with the people that I do and promote the product that I do. And I just think that just especially when there is so much negativity happening in the world, being able to pause and really focus on what matters and really serve as that advocate for the positive impacts that tourism brings is incredibly important and something that we cannot lose sight of.
Yeah, well said. Adam, any final thoughts from you?
This has been really, really good for me. I appreciate the conversation and there's been times I've been really frustrated with losing really good people. And the reality is, if they're not having fun, they're probably going to go find something else to do. And that's true for an advertising agency. It's true for a destination. And so to actually incentivize and encourage having fun in your job is something we could all do a better job of. And I'm excited to kind of think through and tackle that with my executive team.
Yeah. And I double down on that. I think everyone, we've talked about this before in the show. It's we should be surveying and connecting with our team on a constant basis, right? To understand where they are and how we can better equip them, prepare them, and maintain them for performance, right? Because that's ultimately what we want to happen. We're going through this thing right now. It's not just sort of a survey. We do a survey every year to our employees, and we learn a lot about what they like and what they don't like and what they'd like to see changed. But we're also evaluating our performance evaluations. You know, we got a new CEO in that believes in a frequent touch base. That's like, instead of an annual review, let's touch base every 2 or 3 weeks and really look at the performance indicators that matter and how are you doing. And he's only rolled this out to a couple of senior staff members. But to me, it's been transformational because I know exactly what his expectations are of me, and I know what our priorities should be, and it's a constant reminder. So I think at some point we're going to roll that out company-wide so that we can better understand where's someone's head at, how are they feeling, what's their performance level, and what can we do to continue to maintain and improve that. So I think that focus on internal team is something that every DMO should have for sure, and especially right now with the world we live in and the craziness that's going on. So again, Jennifer, thank you. Thank you for bringing this. So Jennifer, this is your opportunity. Do you want to give everyone an update on the brand rollout? I mean, I haven't really talked to you since it rolled out. I think you were about to roll it out last time I talked to you. And how has that gone? And then you can give us a shameless plug for if you want people to reach out to you, where they can find you.
Sure. So backing up a little, when I first joined the organization nearly 4 years ago, which is amazing, I'll be here 4 years in November, time flies. One of the first priorities was to establish a unified destination brand for Dallas. And what we mean by that, it's much more than a logo or a campaign or a tagline. It was this notion that there's no one singular thing that really rises to the top when people think about Dallas. They think about these dated oil cowboy cliche stereotypes from the soap opera from the 1980s or JFK or, big city skyline, and that's it. I've always said that Dallas doesn't suffer from an awareness problem. You ask virtually anybody on the face of the planet, have you heard of Dallas, Texas? The answer is yes. We suffer from a consideration problem. No one is actively considering planning a trip to Dallas, and we wanted to change that and to influence that. So after a couple of years of research and work with our stakeholders, we landed on a new brand identity for Dallas. And knowing that the residents effectively own the brand promise, we took care to launch it locally first. That's something
Oh,
that
hallelujah.
we typically don't do. It was extra work on our end. But we took out a paid media buy. We've hosted events. We actually had the city, we got them to officially declare May 7th during National Travel and Tourism Week last year, as Dallas Can Do Spirit Day to recognize the power and the impacts of travel in Dallas. We had activations, at City Hall, all the things, and have since launched it nationally. But I think one of the really wonderful things to watch is how this new brand has been adopted organically in the community. We now have the mayor, without my having to write it, signing off and talking about it in media that we're a can-do city. The Dallas brand we established is a maverick can-do spirit. And just again, organically, we're hearing these different organizations rather picking this up and referencing it. They're even beginning to just come up with their own creative ideas. We had a hotel partner, for example, utilize some of our branding, some of our creative assets to create murals within their parking garage. There are partners proactively coming to us saying, how can we use this? How can we adopt this? So it's really fantastic, I think, just to see this how it is has taken off and how it has been received. But I will caution and say that this is a long-term play, and it is one that requires constant nurturing in order to ensure that we're all focused kind of on the same thing. So we're incredibly excited with how it's been received, but we've got work to do and a few fun ideas coming in the future to ensure that we continue to tout the benefits of the new brand.
That's awesome. We'd love to have you come back at some point on the
Yeah.
show and just talk about what that brand rollout was like. And I especially love, I double down on what Adam said in terms of the fact you rolled it out locally first is that's perfect. Like
Yes.
that's what should happen. You should always roll out from internal to external with any kind of brand. So that's rare to see in our DMO land. It's even rare for a brand to live locally when it's the external brand. So the fact that it's been adopted is great. Would love to learn from you what went right, what went wrong, because I'm sure you had some detractors along the way.
Oh, yeah.
But if we'll save that for another episode, we'll tease that one. But if people want to reach you, find out more about you and the can-do attitude that you and the Dallas folks exhibit, where can they do that?
You can reach out to me, jennifer.walker@visitdallas.com. Happy to share any and all insights or just talk shop. So,
Thank you,
awesome.
Jennifer. Adam, they want to reach you.
Adam at thebrandrevolt.com, LinkedIn, or of course, you can find me on Tourism IQ.
Awesome. You can find me at stuart.butler@visitmontalbeach.com or on LinkedIn. And thank you for listening. Please tell a friend. We'd love for you to share this episode with as many people as you can, especially your HR people, so that you can evaluate your time off policy and your vacation policy. But thank you guys for listening. Until next time, this has been Destination Discourse.
Thanks, everybody.
Like, if we're not going to be advocates for travel, who is?